Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com.
Hi, Diana Frake here. I'm the host of the Gooder Podcast, where I get to talk with the powerhouse women in the food, beverage, and wellness categories about their journeys to success and their insights on the industry. Thanks for joining us today. This episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo. Retail Voodoo is a brand development firm. Our clients include Starbucks, Kind, REI, PepsiCo, Hi-Key, and many other market leaders. We provide strategic brand and design services for leading brands in food, wellness, and beverage. If your goal is to increase market share, drive growth, or disrupt the marketplace with new and innovative ideas, give us a call. Let's talk. You can find out more at retail-voodoo.com or just email me at info@retail-voodoo.com. Now, before introducing today's guests, I'd like to give a big thank you to Jeremy Weiss for introducing me to our guest today. Now, real quick, Bryce 25 specializes in helping B2B businesses reach their dream 200 using podcasts like mine. To learn more about how to use podcasts for your business, check out Rise 25 at www.rise25.com. Now, today, I'm super excited to introduce Alexi Cashin, co-founder and CEO of Ellen Tenney Imports, a wine and distribution and logistics business, which she was instrumental in growing to multiple eight figures in revenue. Does that multiple eight figures make sense? I'm going to say yes, it does. I'm just going to go from there. She also is the host of her own podcast, the Alexi Cashin Podcast, through which she features leaders from the wine and spirits industries, many of which she has helped launch and manage. In her spare time, she became founder and chief revenue officer of St. Helvey Spike Tincture Tonics, which launched last year, because it's January in the summer of 2021. And we'll get to learn a little bit more about that. In the meantime, Lexi is celebrating 20 years of experience in the food and wine industry. Her career is marked by a wealth of roles in hospitality, retail, wholesale, and supplier positions. Starting out in the restaurant industry in her home state of Colorado, Alexi moved to New York City to season her career. Alexi brings optimism and positivity to everything she does. We get to hear more about that right now. Well, hello, Alexi. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Diana. It's so great to finally be on the show with you.
That's so funny. Yes. How many times can we reschedule a meeting? How are things going? Are you in California right now?
I am. I'm in the Bay Area up in Marin County, and all is well.
All is well. Thank goodness. Knocking on wood for that one.
That's right.
Well, now, when I read the bio, and then, of course, anybody that's listening right now kind of heard you're involved in a lot of things, but before we talk about kind of the newer things, I really want to start with Ellen Tenney Imports because you've been doing that for a while. Can you tell us about Ellen Tenney and why you started it?
Sure. So we started Ellen Tenney Imports, my partner, Tim, Ellen Tenney and I, almost 12 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
In a month or so here. And both of us were working at Palaner Selections, a very reputable importer and distributor in New York City, New York State. We thought to compete in the logistics space. There were fewer players and an opportunity to compete for selling services to other importers, distributors, brands, anybody who needs help moving product, typically from a foreign point of origin, getting into the US, managing the federal compliance elements, all the various moving parts from pickup at a winery to getting product successfully into a warehouse in the US. And so we started that business and really wanted to service you know, more of that middle tier importer. It was a really important time in 2010 because it was post financial crisis of 2008. And so there was a lot of instability. Banks weren't loaning. The challenges for businesses to have access to capital was a real challenge. And so we devised this service called Less Than Container Load, or LCL.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having to fill up a whole container on your own and then import all of those goods and have to pay for all of the freight on a full load, plus have to pay all of your suppliers with terms in short order after that, we basically devised a service for less than container load. So multiple importers, brands were sharing space on one container, which allowed them to move more nimbly, more quickly. They were able to buy just what they needed as opposed to trying to maximize and fill up the container.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really a kind of our launch pad in terms of finding success, reaching lots of customers in the early years.
Yeah.
And then the second service that we offer is distribution. So we are licensed in all states in the U.S.
Yeah.
And can help manage the fulfillment and sale to other wholesalers. And in some states, we can sell directly to restaurants and retailers.
Interesting. Okay. Well, so when you came out with this, I always feel like these really big ideas that usually come during times of uncertainty. And of course, we are certainly in that moment again. As you look back to that time when you started and what's happening now, or maybe what's happened over the last year and a half or so, 2 years, are you seeing any behaviors from a market distribution standpoint that are the same, or have things changed so much that it's just a different kind of stability with its own set of issues?
Yeah, so the current climate is very unstable, as many industries are continuing to play out. And, the alcohol industry is no different. There are challenges due to, the last couple of years, pandemic, global supply chain instability.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you bring that up, because we have found it to be also true that a lot of the sort of a similar energy that we put towards finding our customers, helping those early customers in 2010, that same earnest need or desire to really help people during a challenging time has bubbled up again for us. And it really kind of harkens back to our kind of core values and why we set out to do this and to help other businesses in the U.S. compete in a very highly competitive space and industry. So yes, there are very similar challenges in terms of, instability that we are able to kind of, land on those original values and strive to help people again now almost 5 years later in a time of uncertainty.
Yeah. And I would even think that, we've gone through a couple of administrations since then that have had different philosophies on importing and exporting and relationships, and everything from NAFTA to all of these agreements have changed tremendously. Are you seeing from an import market, is it harder now to bring product into the US? Is it easier, or is it just different?
Well, it's harder now because of the supply chain constraints. So that, and that isn't due to administration. There have been other administrative challenges with the tariffs that were imposed on multiple categories of wine products throughout Europe. That was an unbelievably burdensome time for many importers, having to pay these egregious 20% tariffs on wine. But the other challenge is really just the supply chain constraints.
Yeah.
And that's not unique to the alcohol industry. That is
Yeah.
literally globally, I think people talked about it through the holidays in terms of, you know, there's just going to be things that you can't get, you can't get as quickly as you thought that you used to. And so we're still really reeling from that. There is a, their consumer spending is, has increased. It continues to perform in a way that makes it really challenging to stay on top of the, you know, the equipment is in the wrong portion of the globe, or you have issues with just cost, like the price rises. Seeing, you know, concerns about containers that are, you know, costing $30,000 for people to get, you know, corks or empty glass bottles to import just even dry goods into the U.S., much less try to get finished product, you know, from Europe or South America or the Southern Hemisphere, you know, delivered to the U.S. in a timely fashion. There's still wines that people are waiting for today that they expected or needed to have, you know, for Thanksgiving.
Well, and then you have got, I happen to have some business relationships with really large retailers that purchase alcohol. And I understand, like, we've had some droughts. Global warming is also challenging the marketplace. France, I believe, is one area that got hit. The Bordeaux region got hit pretty hard.
Yes.
I want to say New Zealand, was that another area that got hammered pretty good from a drought standpoint? Is it just that people, like, what do we do in this situation? And it's not like anything that you can really guide people through in environment, or maybe there is, maybe you are guiding people to help them understand how to plan for these types of issues.
It's hard to plan for Mother Nature, for sure. Yeah. And it, you know, you talk about drought, there are other natural disasters or storms and things that, if it's not drought, it's, you know, hailstorms that have ruined crops in Europe, the wildfires here in California that burned through lots of crops, or just, or emitted smoke taint. So even if it didn't burn crops, then that juice is compromised because it has a very smoky taste to it.
I haven't even considered that. Yeah.
So going into 2022, we have some serious headwinds in terms of sourcing. Absolutely. Whether you're sourcing domestically in the US or from Europe, as in your example, there is a shortage of juice, you know, to make wine. Absolutely. And, you know, that's why, you know, there are certain vintages that are heralded, you know, because they had sort of that perfect storm or lack of storm, or you know what I mean? Like, right. The right amount of moisture, the right amount of sun. I mean, this is sort of photosynthesis 101, but you can't predict those. And so vintage will guide consumers, because obviously that'll play into the noteworthiness of a year and speak to the weather they're in. But yes, going into this year, we're definitely going to see a shortage across the globe.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, talking about shifting and inventory and supply chain and all of the disruption, let's talk about innovation from a disruption standpoint. Now, St. Hildy's launched in 2021. Why don't you tell us a little bit about St. Hildy's and where that idea came from?
Sure. I launched St. Hildy's with two other co-founders, Christine Peck and Megan DeRoma, a college friend and her sister-in-law. And we set out to compete in the better for you booze category, or alternate beverages. Some are calling it the fourth category of alcohol. Often in cans as a format. So things like, you know, hard kombuchas, seltzers, RTDs, or ready to drink cocktails, that category is definitely booming. And so I was intrigued, sort of watching that happen. I like the convenience. I like the, you know, I'm not much of a beer drinker, more of a wine drinker myself. You know, I liked the idea of, you know, cracking a hard kombucha and knowing that it was like lower in sugar, or, you know, didn't have the carbs that, that beer offers. And so as a health conscious woman and somebody who is, interested in health and wellness. I was very intrigued, but I also was disappointed because a lot of the offerings kind of fell short. They were better for you, but only because they were lowering calories, sort of a skinny version of alcohol. But that didn't mean that they were made with integrity. There were often fake, artificial flavoring and ingredients, often sugar added to give it sweetness or monk fruit or anything that kind of created this sort of artificial beverage. And I don't like fake and I don't like added sugar. I like very high tone, honest, elevated flavors. Mm-hmm. And that's what we set out to build. St. Hildy's was crafted by, like I said, Megan, Christine, and I. We launched with three flavors, elderberry, hibiscus, guava, ginger, and lemon turmeric. Mm. And so, you can tell, we thoughtfully chose ingredients that are elevated. Elderberry, ginger, turmeric, these are all ingredients that are not only delicious, but also have, the upside of benefits to them.
Yeah.
And so, we launched last summer. It's been wonderful to, breathe life to another business and a brand to boot, which is not something I've ever done before. I've never made a product. So, it's been a really exciting adventure so far.
Yeah. Now, was 2021 the planned launch? Was that we're launching this bad boy in the middle of this, or was it just kind of how long was the process before the idea to launch?
So we, I'd say end to end before we had product in market, it was 16 months, which is pretty fast.
It is.
We would have liked to, get to market as fast as you can. That is the name of the
course
for a new brand. And so we were, we're definitely chomping at the bit, got in, right at the tail of summer. And then we've just sort of proof of concept, testing it. We've gotten into, grocery chains and independent shops, key restaurant accounts. So it's been really exciting to get the feedback from the trade.
Yes.
And then also consumers to just hear their comments and adoration and,
oh, that's so good.
Yeah. So that's been really, really, really important to just get that feedback and keep kind of fine tuning as we continue. And we hope to develop more flavors, as we go, but right now it's great to just get the great feedback on the three that we started with. And it's a very competitive space. And,
yes.
Obviously you're garnering for not just shelf space in a retail setting, but cooler space within that set.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Anything RTD, anything in the retail environment, nobody just has a slot that's just sitting there waiting for your product. You're moving, you're replacing something. So you got to have a winner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And not only a product that tastes great and that people will enjoy and that's sessionable, but we really set out to, with St. Hildy's, to create a brand with depth, to create something that's real. It's very much a reflection of myself and my co-founders. The wellness and the support of women. St. Hildy was a real woman. She was St. Hildegard von Bingen. She was a 12th century mystic and mother of plant medicine. She studied cosmology and science, brewed her own beer. So we have our muse of St. Hildy's behind the stand. But just really wanted to make something authentic, delicious, and elevated.
Yes. Well, that makes sense, right? Weren't the original beer makers, weren't they? They were technically witches.
Witches and nuns. Exactly.
Those women. Oh, right. So, and are you actually getting live time with people when they're trying these products? Are you talking to them and getting that direct feedback, or is this all just kind of through the communication network?
A lot of it is live, thankfully.
Oh my goodness, that's awesome.
Retail partners that have are doing some sampling, and so we've been able to get in front of consumers and just get their feedback, and you hear it from the horse's mouth. So it's been really wonderful to have that in person. Obviously kind of closed in a little bit in the recent months, But I'm looking forward to springtime again and hopefully opportunity to, you know, to be out there and connecting with people more.
Yeah. Well, so kind of speaking of people, I guess this is going to be a really non sequitur, or maybe a really non weird sequitur. It's going to be a weird change. I want to do a little zag here because I want to talk about something that you and I were discussing, you know, kind of women in the beverage industry in general. You know, I've had conversations. I learned about this originally when we were working with Sherelle Klaus of Dry Soda, about the beverage industry still being predominantly male led. And you and I talked about this when we prepped. From your perspective, what, you know, the industry still continues to be led by men, which is okay, but I think we're kind of missing opportunity to serve our communities well by having it be so dominated. What are the barriers in your mind that you're seeing that kind of are inhibiting the new entrants by way of women and just other diversity into this category? What's missing there? What are the missing ways of entry?
So I get asked sort of questions along these lines quite a bit. And I find that it isn't that there's a lack of women in the industry, because there certainly is an ever presence of both males and females throughout. But you're right, in terms of leadership, or I would even say a step farther, ownership tends to be more of male business owners.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very involved in my local entrepreneurial community here in San Francisco. And, you know, I'm quite horrified by the fact that of all of the businesses in the US that reach $1 million or more in revenue, only 1% of those businesses are owned by women, even though of those businesses, half are owned by women.
Oh, interesting.
So there's an inequality in terms of both entrepreneur, and this is across the board, right? Outside of the alcohol industry. And so there's an inequity too, in terms of just female entrepreneurs within the alcohol industry. And then also the statistic that, like, you know, there's also an inequity in terms of revenue achievement and successes that business will experience. And in my experience, I think I have experienced, you know, inequities when it comes to fundraising, bank loans, financial institutions. Like, you can't start a business without cash.
Right.
You can't keep it going and, or grow it. And so, like, that to me is an answer that is kind of choking back, potentially a female entrepreneur in the alcohol industry's, ambition for success. I also think there are, you know, just a natural challenge that many women face in terms of just balance. You know, I know so many, I've observed so many women who are highly competent in their work, you know, because they're phenomenal mothers or caretakers, and a lot of that toll is on them personally. And of course that bleeds into their work and their ability to, you know, really continue to execute on a high level compared to their real counterparts. And that's not something that's unique to the alcohol industry, but definitely something that I observe nonetheless.
How do you feel about, you know, I think of, well, I have two thoughts here. First of all, the first one being mentorship. I wonder, could there be more mentorship break things down into gender, but can we have more women being mentored by men? I know it's important to be mentored by women, but if there's a lack of women leadership in the industry, can we increase the openness to mentorship and kind of driving that opportunity for learning and networking, which I think networking is really part of it. Like, who you know is just as important as what you know, particularly in this part of the biz. Is that something that you think that we can start to shift the dynamics on, or is it really just access to money and lenders and investors just opening their minds to it? Combination of both?
Well, I think the opening those financial resources is paramount, but of course there's an overall mindset and culture, if you will, that we can all play a part in immediately by you know, making a pledge, my company, Ellen Tenney Imports, we started working with Be the Change, which is
good.
An organization that has a job fair for the alcoholic beverage industry that really promotes diversity and equity and inclusion in your hiring practices. Mm-hmm. We participated in one of their job fairs last spring and hired two people. And it was a wonderful thing to participate in. But what I really love about it is that they, you know, kind of hold you to it, right? That you're you're not just saying something on social media about your business's practices, you know, to pledge that you'll not only do it in this moment in time, but you'll continue to do it, that it'll continue to be a thoughtful practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that type of mantra is very powerful anywhere, if it's mentorship or if it's your hiring or if it's, speaking opportunities, ways in which to promote and tell stories of women and diverse individuals within the industry. I think that's a great way to continue the conversation. I also really love, Ellen Tenney's a sponsor of Women of the Vine and Spirits organization as well.
Cool.
Deborah Brenner. I had her on my podcast. She's wonderful, a pioneer in this space and has been at it for a long time. So I really applaud people like Deborah who have made it their life's work to increase diversity, you know, and inclusion within the alcohol space.
Along that route, then like, as we start to see kind of, as we start to kind of grow the diversity in our leadership, I know that will then help us create some really new products that always just, you know, we're starting to have visibility on consumers in a different way when we've got that kind of leadership. What kind of trends are you seeing in the marketplace now? Or maybe what do you have your peak on? Of course, you know, the spiked beverages are still growing, right? Hemp, cannabis, and CBD infused beverages are still growing, although we're limited because of states, you know, all of the legal components of that. But what are you seeing coming up in the future that consumers are looking for?
I think that, consumers are looking for something that is real, approachable, something that's different. I think that there's, you know, a draw for authenticity.
Yeah.
That is, you know, important to modern day consumers. I mean, when you think of just the change of consumer interest in alcohol categories, you know, the boomers have really had a strong stakehold in alcohol consumption of wine products in particular. And, you know, the millennials and, Gen Z are coming on with different ideas and want to not just drink for the sake of drinking, but they want to experience something.
Yeah.
They want to learn something. They want to, you know, open up their minds and take it in aside from just what you're taking in, you know, through your lips. And so that's an interesting conundrum, I think, for a lot of suppliers. Yeah. And one which I think the wine industry in particular, who has a fear of sort of losing ground with these newer consumers.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much to be told in terms of the depth behind wine and the stories and, the authenticity therein. I think it's really hard for, modern consumer to really tackle the wine industry. It's so massive.
So big.
It's so big. The amount of knowledge, it's like you get a whole degree.
Agreed.
That's why there are masters of wine and
oh my goodness,
master psalms. And, you know, you can literally just commit your entire life's work to studying and tasting and mastering wine. So it's, you know, that your average consumer, you know, can't possibly do that.
Yeah.
What can they do? Like, what can we do to educate, to open the minds?
Make it easy.
To create that same experience that I think.
Yeah.
These same modern consumers are keen on mixology and cocktails and RTDs and spiked beverages.
Yeah. And along that line, you know, right, we're in January. It's dry January. That category, the dry category, is kind of going bonkers right now. I'll be curious to see how long, what the longevity on this is, if this is going to be staying for a while. But it doesn't sound like the dry months are necessarily having an impact on alcohol consumption either. It's like net new almost, or displacing soda or something. Mm-hmm. Something's happening. Something different is happening. Hey?
Yeah, something definitely different is happening. I think there's the, you know, the well curious, or the kind of sober curious or well curious, are really interested in the alcohol free, you know, spirits, quote unquote, or different products that are really beloved by folks who consume alcohol and don't consume alcohol.
Right, right.
Sometimes you just want to be a part of that social ritual without having, you know, the drawbacks of a buzz or a hangover, or, you know, wanting to cut it out during the week, or just being more conscientious about health. There's a lot of products that are cropping up, and they're definitely not just in vogue during dry months. They're in vogue with this kind of new consumer base that is really interested in wellness, genuinely. Yeah. And so the lack of alcohol in certain products, I think, has definitely created a buzz there. We have worked with several wine products that are de-alkalized, essentially.
Oh, really?
And those were amazingly popular. So I think there'll be more of that as well to come.
Interesting. Good. Well, that'll be fun to watch, as well as I know there's some environmental packaging exploration that could probably be its own podcast in and all of it together.
For sure.
Yeah. You know, Alexi, I love learning all about this. Kind of wrapping up our time together, I have a few questions that I like to ask absolutely everyone. One of them is, what's an interesting fact that people are always surprised to hear outside of our industry that you like to share?
An interesting fact about the alcohol industry. It's amazingly small.
Really?
It feels like a very tight-knit community. I've remarked with so many other professionals that the accessibility is so possible. Like, if anyone out there is considering a career in alcohol, there are so many people out there who are willing to help you. Like, just start asking.
Really? That's very awesome.
Despite how insanely competitive it is, there is such a camaraderie and a real kindredship throughout our community.
Oh my goodness. What, that's really awesome to hear. And, I think whenever people think competitive, they think not friendly.
Yeah.
But it's almost like sports, right? Like, you get done with your, and then you can go and have a glass of wine or have a beverage of whatever, and with somebody that you've known forever. And that's pretty great.
Yeah. Well, it's convivial, right? I mean, at the end of the day, we're drinking alcohol, and that lets down, that lets down some barriers, that lets down the, a lot of the pomp and circumstance, and you just get real quick.
Yeah. Tell me, are there any women leaders that you are watching right now that you just think are doing great things, or any rising stars that you're watching that you would like to elevate for the work they're doing right now?
Yeah, I actually am just wrapping up a series on my podcast, the Alexi Passion Podcast, where I have talked to other badass brand makers, all female. And so I talked to Jordan Salcido with Ramona. I love her. I love her energy. I love what she's doing with Ramona. I am a huge fan of Caitlin Landisberg. She's founded Sufferfest, the gluten-free beers and functional beers, which she sold. And then I'm really, really just super, super pleased to know Kat Hontas of 21 Seeds Tequilas. They make infused tequilas. She's been a mentor to the Hildes. So just really appreciate her, her entrepreneurialism, and really neat things what she's doing. And I haven't yet met so Kin, to talking about alcohol-free spirits and so forth, the brand Kin, Jen, who's their founder, I find her really enigmatic and quite powerful and strong and very thoughtful. And so there's so many women out there.
Oh, yeah. Great. Thank you for sharing those. And this might be redundant, right? But do you have any brands or trends that you're following right now? And if there are, why are you following them?
Yeah. You know, I think, as I said, I was originally drawn to this sort of fourth category of alcohol, spiked, et cetera. And, you know, I haven't seen anything in my 20 years that has been quite this much of a tidal wave or shift or disruption in the industry.
Uh-huh.
So I'm drawn to the disruption. You know, I'm proud to be a pioneer of making these changes and offering beverages that, you know, 20 years ago didn't exist.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think we're kindred in that way. I'm all about the disruption. What can I do that's surprising? Cause I like surprising. So naturally I'm drawn to that. So I can completely understand.
Yes.
Well, listen, we've been talking with Alexi Cashin, co-founder and CEO of Ellen Tenney Imports and the founder, chief revenue officer of St. Hildy's. Alexi, if people want to learn more about you or the work that you're doing with any of your brands, where can we find you?
So you can email me, Alexi at ellentennyimports.com or Alexi at drinkahildy.com. You can find us on both of those handles on Instagram at ellentennyimports, at drinkahildy, and would love to chat.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And I'm so excited that we finally connected. I know that I will continue to send folks your way. I know that there are a lot of really amazing innovation happening out there. And if I can be a connector for you, I'm happy to do that.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. So excited to have spent time with you today and looking forward to watching St. Hildy's grow and maybe even a future cocktail. I don't know when or where, but it may happen. Hey.
Excellent. Can't
yes.
wait.
And so thanks to everyone that's listening today. And thank you, Alexi. We'll catch you next time on the Gooder Podcast.
Thanks, Diana.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.